Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings and greetings, greetings and blessings, blessed souls. We're alive because we're meriting to stay alive in this most existential moment with the intention of being configured with Torat Chaim, instructions of life, Torat Chesed, instructions of kindness, Torat Rachamim, instructions of mercies. You're now tuned in to Blog Talk Radio, when we humbly assert that we are the higher inner frequency of Blog Talk Radio. We call ourselves Soul Class. This is Soul Class 723 in conversation with Jerome Sage Butler, Part 3. Baruch Hashem, blessed is our eternal Creator. Shalom, peace, and bracha, blessing upon the entire human family experience. That's over 7.7 billion human beings dreaming and streaming and gleaming all across this wonderful, blessed planet. The mustard seed of the universe, the planet Earth. This is Anti-Eugenics Radio. With Creator's help, our broadcast is taking place right now on June 2nd, 2019. It's now 11:32 a.m. live from Turtle Island equals USA equals AKA Unified Solarization, corresponding to 10:32 a.m. Jamaica time. We plan on speaking with co-host Tree of Life Television Network prolific lecturer Jerome Solch Butler, who dwells within his spiritual, cognitive, emotional realm, coined promoting the Tree of Life values. Butler is driven to tap into his deep ancestral wellsprings of divine source, correlating, relating, and developing a dialogue with other human souls, intended to generate and guide human dialogue towards analyzing the moral and ethical nature we as human beings are well advised to explore. Program content will focus on empowering a woman in order to strengthening a man. And also, I'd like to advise everyone, you can check out one of Jerome Sage's latest videos. You'd have to go to our promo, and this is something that you can access by going there. You can learn more about Butler by befriending him on Facebook and typing in Tree of Life Television Network on YouTube.com. Our call number in the second half of today's presentation will be 347-838-8669. Meanwhile, the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones in a peaceful and pleasant manner. And we're listening to some alpha wave music to improve your memory and super intelligence, because actually every human being has super intelligence. It's a matter of just activating and having someone encouraging you to access it. And here's someone right now, right from, I believe, from the St. Andrew's Parish in Jamaica, the Diamond of the Caribbean, Jerome Sage Butler. Good morning, Jerome Sage. A wonderful opportunity to say shalom aleichem, peace upon you and everyone down there in Jamaica. It's been about 6 months, and before you go into your prologue, I just want to congratulate you for uniting with the fine people at Sila Media.
Thank you, brother. Sorry to be a little bit late on the button, but you know, the Lord had me in a transfiguration a little, but I'm here. Blessing, 6 months of a long separation, but a great unity. So, into the music, I will come forward in a little.
Okay, no problem. Now, I'd like to share something with everyone that I saw just this morning, before my prayers this morning. And this is the idea which was brought up by the Lubavitcher Rebbe. And what he talked about was the following. Recognizing the abundance of the Most High's blessings and man's role in their preservation and appropriate use will remove the basis of strife and division among nations. Once mankind or humankind, womankind, whatever you want to call us beings human, realize that the Almighty has provided abundance for everyone, there'll be no motivation for war and even strife. Two levels, war and strife. Jerome Sage, you know, I know we're going to be talking about empowering the woman to empower the man, to strengthen a man, but ultimately the goal is, the forest that we're aiming for, is the cessation of war and the cessation of strife. You're taking this, and by the way, Jerome Sage, we also have on the line William, one of your peers, I believe, from Florida. Good morning, William, as well.
Good morning.
Blessings, brother, blessings. You know, Brother Dal, it's been such a good while, and, you know, it's such a good unity to be back in this moment. So I want to give thanks to Brother William as well, and blessings for all who are listening as well, too, you know. It's a beautiful morning in Jamaica. Brother Dal, you know.
Yes.
You'd have to run the preamble by me again because, you know, the moment of just being in awe of the moment, it just slipped me. But,
okay.
You can pass the comment on to William, and I'll be right on gear in the next moment because it's such a beautiful moment just to be, you know, caught in this vibration. It's a joy.
Okay. William, your comment on how can we make human beings realize there is an abundance of blessings upon the creation, and that's our, and it's our role to preserve these blessings and appropriately use them to remove the basis of basically, okay, there's three things to be talking about: war, strife, and division amongst the nations. And once we realize, as human beings, with all blessed and anointed, never to be disappointed with our divine image, no one should have the feel the motivation for war, strife, and division. Your take on these matters?
Well, my take on these matters are, it's actually very true. From my experience, I've noticed that when one starts to have the frequency of love and starts to care about his fellow human beings, there are things starts to change as far as anything that has been pre-programmed and anything that has been pre-programmed by society, such as,
right.
In my example, I started to view people differently, not look at race, class, creed, or color, and started to appreciate things differently. I started to spend more time in nature and appreciate, realize that God and or Elohim is in nature. His very presence is in nature. His very presence is within us. And if every individual had that mindset or grew to understand God in that manner, then
hello? I seem to have lost
Hello?
You. William? Yeah,
okay,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, okay, well, I can pick up while Brother Williams, I'm sort of the connection. Okay, Brother
okay.
Dan, you know, the essence of it is that, you know, as William was referring to, love, and when we return to what I would call the Adamic state, right? Which is like the natural
mm-hmm.
state where the presence of God really dwells amongst man. I mean, you know, it's a bit away from the structure of the design of the world currently. And in terms of removing humans from situations that lead them to strive, to basically go against their inherent godly nature. I know even in philosophy, people tend to assert that maybe it's really just a philosophy to think that we have an inherently good nature. But I think it's a natural process that is good within us, that is evident. You know, however we opinionate that is up to others. It's up to us. But the thing is that, you know, to remove humans from the thought process that leads to strife, to the kind of creation of a way of life that supports that strife, is, I guess, the greatest endeavor. And love as a philosophy or as a way of being or a behavior generating, you know, way of life is good to get us out of that. Even the essence of empowering women, if we are living more from a state more designed in a loving outlook, and love not just as some kind of a pleasure-based thinking, but love in terms of, you know, an equity among souls, right? Where we really,
right.
truly are equal in our, you know, pronouncements over each other and in our interactions. Then from that, I think that is the best, most harmonious state we could live in. And any work towards that, I think, is fulfilling the divine law in us, you know? And I think it's upon us as men and women to kind of stand for, you know, that clarity. But I know it is complex because, you know, the geopolitics and the differences of our societies kind of clouds our view of the ultimate human good. You know, what are we doing? Human good and human understanding of that good. What are we doing here? What is the meaning of life? You know, what is our purpose?
Right. Beautiful thought, Jerome Sage. And I just want to mention, Jerome Sage, and William is back on, that we have a new connection, and I think you'll be pleased to hear this. So this will be the first time, Jerome Sage, that you'll be able to talk to our listeners in Ethiopia. This is the latest country that has joined our listeners.
I was just speaking about Ethiopia, too. That's so wonderful. shalom, shalom, Ethiopia.
Now, the reason why because, you know, I'm a student of Torah, as people would call the Bible, and our prophet Moses took refuge in Ethiopia for 40 years. Many people don't realize this. Well, I want to bring in this point before we get to the meat of our discussion today, Jerome Sage and William, that before I came into a Torah lifestyle and I was associating and living amongst with Jamaicans, Rastafarians, mm-hmm. Christians, that they I came across teachings from Ras Migal, and I think in the Negus Band, and he talked about African oral tradition. I never really heard that term in my education growing up here in the West. So then when I started to learn Torah, and even on just the simplest English level, because many books at that time in the mid-1980s started being translated from the Hebrew and the Yiddish and the Aramaic and English, I learned that Jacob went to learn the oral Torah tradition from the son of Noah and his great-great-grandson Ever, Shem and Ever. And I realized, I connected the dots. And what happened was I realized, wait a minute, I've been with my Jamaican Rastafarian friends who've been talking about African oral tradition, and it clicked like that, like a light went off. And part of the oral tradition is that when Moses fled Egypt after the incident where he killed an Egyptian who had been beating a Hebrew Israelite slave, is that he actually ran to Ethiopia and took refuge there for 40 years until he went to Midian and met Jethro, and he married his wife Zipporah in the burning bush, and then we know the rest of the story with the Exodus. So I just want to show. So to me, 3,300 years later, and I also want to point out too a very important point. I know we're being very eclectic, but I think that's part of the nature of the dynamics of this program and my guests like yourself that come on, is that we cover a certain matter, but we also go from soup to nuts as we're serving the main course. Is that this next coming weekend will mark the 3,332nd year of the giving of what the world calls the Ten Commandments. So we're at a very favorable time. So I that's why I'm very much happy that 3,300 years later, Ethiopia, which was in the Hebrew, it's called Kush. I am looking at the map as the logistics of where my listening audience is, or our listening audience is, Jerome Sage, and I know the Torah is true because here I'm looking 3,321 years later, I'm seeing the map of the land that Moses, the mighty Levi prophet, took refuge. So what was in the beginning shall be in the end.
blessings, Brother Dan. And you have a lot of, anthropologists who say also that, the land of Kush, it's just more than what we call geographical Ethiopia today, possibly also Yemen and parts
right.
All the way probably to Sudan as well, too. So, but essentially, it is a great empire and the essence of ancient tradition, that exists in the Kushite Empire. Has been a mixture of, I would say, a lot of Judaic traditions as well as Christian traditions, right? And I think a lot of it came together in Coptic Christianity. I can be correct because you have real scholars out there, but I know there's an evolution into Coptic Christianity of Judaic and early Christian principles as well too. And essentially, in terms of we talk about the unity of personality or the spirituality that has evolved to really adore and venerate the Most High God, Each nation of the earth, has a spark of that divine nature within them. And I think it's beautiful, when we can gather together in that unity, It really shows the array of Yah's divine creation. Our philosophical takings on it is like our very gaze at which we look at the truth. And I think, in each tongue, the truth will be spoken a slightly different way in sound frequency, but essentially of which it professes ultimately the same. I love that exchange, and I think, for a program like this going across, the spectrum of the earth, it's a wonderful thing. And blessings to Brother William and Brother Travis and, you know, Sister Delisha, and for all the people who over the time has been listening on this program, and Brother Dan for the work you've been doing as we come closer to bringing more harmony, you know, towards that soul actualization you speak about so strongly and fervently.
Thank you. William, I see you're back on. We'd like to chime in.
I agree with everything Jerome and yourself mentioned.
Okay. William, are you on speakerphone, William?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so I'm saying if you want to contribute towards the, you know, giving your perspectives, please you can go off the speakerphone, because when you're on speakerphone, you sound more distant than, say, myself.
Yeah,
or,
yes.
Yeah, okay. So, Drum Sage and William, I just want to go into one more thing, which is brought to, and again, we are going to get to the main point of today's program, but I came across yesterday on the Blessed Shabbat a teaching, a prophecy from Jeremiah, Yirmiyahu HaNavi, who is also known in our tradition as the prophet to the nations because he spoke of such universal accord. And we started off the program with hoping to break through the barriers that sometimes divide and conquer us, which is the old Roman ideologies. And we consider ourselves of Israel in the last phase of the Edomite exile, which is rooted in Roman ideology. Roman ideology is rooted in Edomite ideology. That in chapter 17, verse 7, verse 8, I'd like to read those two verses and read a little elucidation on that by the Lubavitcher Rebbe as follows. First, the two verses. Blessed is the person who trusts in the Most High. The Most High will be his security. Such a person will be a tree planted by the water, spreading its roots by a stream. It will not notice when the hot weather comes. Its leaves will be green. It will not be anxious in a year of drought, nor will it cease bearing fruit. So our sages from past ages explain this simile. Just as a tree whose roots are more massive than its branches cannot be toppled by winds, a person whose good deeds exceed his wisdom cannot be toppled by the winds of life challenges. In this metaphor, our good deeds are the means by which our wisdom are securely rooted. Amassing good deeds requires the discipline, perseverance, and dedication that we evince by virtue of our super-rational devotion to the Almighty. This devotion then carries over into the pursuit of our wisdom. We seek wisdom because this is a part of how the Almighty wants us to forge a connection with Him. Raw discipline is not enough. Creator wants us to search for Creator with our minds in order to thereby foster love and awe of Him as well. Basing wisdom on devotion indeed avoids the major pitfall of intellectual inquiry. The strength of the intellect, its ability to see the merits in any line of argument, is also its weakness. Any conclusion that we may teach to our intellect will also be prey to the gnawing fear that there might be a counter-argument that could undermine it. If, however, our deeds outweigh our wisdom is derived from our devotion and discipline. We are sure that as the verse continues, we will be like a tree that spreads its roots by a stream. These words can be read as its roots spread, the water they absorb from the ground, drawing it up into the branches. The groundedness of our roots will extend up to the branches, meaning that we will feel in our intellectual connection with the Almighty the same strong connection to Him that characterizes our raw discipline and devotion. I just want to mention on a physical plane, in our generation, this wonderful new type of watering plants and vegetation and fruits. It's called tift. In Hebrew, we call it tift-tuf irrigation, where instead of raining moisture, water, on the top of a tree or top of a plant, you feed the roots. And my brother-in-law, who lives in the Holy Land, is a gardener, who told me, I said, what about that fierce Mediterranean heat? He's like, if you're doing the proper type of drip-drop irrigation, the top of the tree and the fruits are protected. So we see that, as I like to say, a person of roots bears good fruits in due season, because he knows that if his roots are being watered by his expanding consciousness to connect to the Most High, he's going to reach out to the branches and the fruits and what other succulent produce are at the top of the tree. Drum Sage, your take on these matters.
Oh, very, 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 very majestic, you know, very majestic. It's just when you hear wisdom in actuality, it really just stirs up, you know, your soul. But the first thing on the last point, you know, I remember from within the book of Enoch that there's a reminder that the Lord watered the earth from the mist. And I think that was a state of pre-diluvian existence. And I think, as I think about it, and I hear you speak this, I'm thinking, wow, you know, is it awesome that we can get closer to the actual alignment? I call it the Adamic alignment. And I'm sure there's a word within the Jewish and the Hebrew, within Yiddish, or even one of the base languages that refers to it in such that where you understand the original man, it was kind of hard to separate him from the environment. And the essence of wisdom
right.
without a good deed is like flowers just supporting utility without aesthetics, you see. It's just not the case. I mean, the beauty and the foundations of its appreciation is duly considered, you know, in our creation. And I think that's, it shows off the handiwork of the Most High. Not only is beauty present, but it's appreciable. See, I mean, I don't think it is so easily grasped as awesome that is, you know? So not mm-hmm. just to have wisdom in the sense of just observing things and chronicling them, you know, like we could observe, what do you call them, maxims or idioms or little anecdotes,
mm-hmm.
and you could say that is wisdom, but the truth, as you said, it is watered and it's fed from the depth of the good deeds. Because the good deeds to give, not necessarily in receipt, but to give is to feed, is to actually, is life itself. It's life-giving. It's the more you offer of yourself, you know, into the presence of life, is the more life is fulfilled. Not just in he or she who gives, but in also those who receive, you know. So in this giving and the good deed is how one's understanding of life, you know, comes to meaning. Because one has faith. A lot of times I recognize this. One has faith, but when you examine how one's faith operates, I see sometimes it operates based upon a systematic institutionalized viewpoint. While there is a value in study and in intensive study and creating the psychological understanding from study, and even from the functionalities of study, we build systems that work. But at the same time, one has to get out there like the layman, like the good Samaritan,
mm-hmm.
and act on
mm-hmm.
the word of goodness, where it's
mm-hmm.
just doesn't remain a philosophy, you know. So wisdom really do need good deeds, you know. We need to do things in this earth to bring about some amount of human, you know, connection that has already been established, but we've been losing it because the words we've been following and the kind of faith we've been engendering isn't keeping that in us, isn't keeping us firmly rooted in our humanness. And I think that's why our worlds might be splintering, and I think that's why there's a devaluation in the human personage, in the human life itself.
Mm-hmm.
It itself is not the honor. What its abstractions are have become the honor. And I think that is a bit scary, but, I mean, I don't know if Brother William, you know, has more to say on that.
Yes, William, your take on these matters.
Yes, sir.
William?
I was thinking about... Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. Please go ahead.
Yeah, while you were reading the excerpt, I was thinking about Psalm 1 where it says, I shall be planted like a tree, or I shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth its fruit in its season. My leaf
mm-hmm.
also shall not wither, and whatever I do shall prosper. And pretty much I correlate that with this season in which I pretty much have gone through this situation in which I wasn't as connected to the Most High as I should have been, and I due to that fact, a lot of situations were happening that were out of my control. And most recently, I went out to, when I realized what was going on, I went out to nature and I looked at a plant and saw how, and something came to me as far as you see sometimes you see a plant that it can be very beautiful, but after a while it starts to deteriorate or it starts to die due to the heat or lack of water or whatnot. But pretty much the spirit told me that when you water it back up, when you add water, when you add the nutrients, that same plant that looked like there was no hope for it, it gets back, it gets its vibrancy back. So pretty much it mm-hmm. put it on my spirit that when you reconnect to the Most High, when you you're like a plant that will not wither, you're like a plant that's gonna get back its fruits. So it what you mentioned is very very applicable.
Beautiful. And thank you for your input. I also want to just one more thing before we're going to go into the meat of our discussion. We've had a lot of appetizers and a lot of preambles, but I think it's all part of our uniting drum sage because it's been too long since we've been on live on the the waves, the internet cyberspace,
yes.
And so
yes,
Bob would say, we got so much things to say, but you know, so it's all coming
drip by drip.
The first Chabad Rebbe, Reb Shneur Zalman of Liadi, was credited for being a master of giving advice to others. And one of the things I read about him, one of the things that, so to speak, qualified him, aside from his assiduous Torah study and his great advancements at the level of prayer, meditative experiences, was the fertile soil of his experience. Now, that's very interesting. Experience is like enriching the soil. And since our bodies are basically ultimately outsourced from the soil, in the mindset of a person who is a master of advice, you have to trace it back to the fact that he or she has many experiences in reaching out to other human beings, and that enriches his soil, her soil, that they become. Not that it's very interesting. Paradoxically, this Rebbe once said, do not go out to give people advice, but rather if someone comes to you, you give the advice. And when people would come to him for the advice, based on the rich soil of experience that reverberated through his right back and left brain thinking, he was able to become the person that he eventually actualized as the leader of this Hasidic movement for over 200, which is actually older than the United States of America. It's 277 years ago, him carrying back traditions, going back all the way back to Mount Sinai. So I just want to just share another perspective, is that when people think they can just be ivory tower scholars, unfortunately what they might be building is their own Tower of Babel and just babbling on. Jordan Sage, your take on these matters.
Blessings, brother. You know, like as I said, you know, as I'm listening to the information and, you know, just drawing the clarity in, you know, it's thought-provoking, you know, it's actually thought-provoking. And in our present times, as we correlate information, you know, that we've learned from our great teachers, you know, we recognize that, you know, there's a need more and more for that information, for people who have understanding of this information and for its application in our lives. You understand? We really need to take, you know, deep, draw in deep the breath of curiosity, because right now where we are in our human conditions, we need, you know, like that regenerating source, like William was talking about, the essence of water to a withering plant, or the spirit in the sense of religion, the presence of God coming into the life, restoring that life-giving energy and making, you know, the very essence and presence replete with life. You know what I mean? It's not just a word, but to know that you can feel, to sense, to see, and to use all these senses to have the experiences in the events of your life, your family situations, you understand me? Those who are going to universities, those who are going to high school, you know, those who are, you know, going forward to doing the resumes to get that job of their dream, are basically those who are trying to fulfill a purpose, a life ambition that is born through spiritual, you know, discernment, not necessarily just for a material way of life. We need that information, and we need more of these thought-provoking inquiry into the human experience. And the knowledge of the Rebbe over the centuries, you know, I think it's been too squarely kept in the essence of the clergy on the Christian religious side, or in the essence of a scribe, you know, and rabbis to some degree. And it's a good thing that you're doing to bring the information in this kind of depth, you know, out into a public medium where we can analyze it and look at it. In light of other days,
this is part of what I've been told by my mentors, is to do this because we've got to take it out of the books and bring it into reality. You know, I mean, you know, the Creator sounds like a great entity in the books, but when we can drive away hatred, jealousy, and all sorts of forms of competition, which just creates more strife and war and division, as we mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, then the words that are in the books become living words, not just theological notions.
Absolutely.
That's very important. William, I'd like to get, we're going to go to the main course. We're going to chapter 31, verse 14 in the book of Proverbs, which was coined and written, penned by King Solomon, son of King David, who everyone is aware of. And he goes on to say, and he wrote this, by the way, again, to remind those who haven't heard our previous presentations, he wrote the book of Proverbs in tribute to his mother, Bathsheba, who, of course, was the wife of King David. So in chapter 31, verse 14, King Solomon describes woman. She is like the merchant ships. She brings her food from afar. Now, I'd like to just add a little commentary, and then we'll go and turn to William, because we skipped over him in this previous discourse just right now. That when a woman is not this, the fact that a woman is described as a merchant ship, we're talking about a woman being human. The woman is a large entity that we men should understand. A ship, part of it's underwater, and part of it floats above the water, and it must encounter waves, sometimes vicious storms, sometimes calm water, and yet she's able to prevail over all forms of antagonistic environmental realms, and yet she's able to be very fruitful, to not just to think about her situation despite the travails that a woman can go through on a monthly basis when she's in her fruit-bearing years, child-bearing years, that in fact part of her is immersed in it, that you cannot see the bottom of the ship, but the vast majority of her is in fact standing above all different types of fluctuations in the cycles of life as her, as a woman who is the entity, the catalyst for allowing the human family experience to be fruitful and multiply. Drum Sage, your take on these. William, please, you start, and then we'll go to Drum Sage.
That's actually a few things that you mentioned as far as the down the metaphor even more, as far as some of it is the ship, is half of it is hidden, the other half is able to be seen, and then I actually never thought of it that in those matters, as far as also about having to go through all the crashing waves, and it's I mean, thinking of my mother, it's really beautiful to see just a mother in general, how they go through all these situations, and in spite of that, they're still trying to fight for their family. And of course, there are mm-hmm. some outliers, but being you mentioning it and giving more context to that, it kind of just makes me want to go back and reread the chapter and meditate on it a little bit more.
Thank you. Thank you. Drum Sage.
Well, yes, beloved. Yes, beloved God. I feel you. I mean, it is an awesome description, if you ask me. I think the metaphoric language opens up, you know, so much more clarity. And a woman being described, in essence, as a merchant ship in the context of what that age was, right? And how valuable contact with a far-off land was. And the jewels and the products, the experiences, the very people from that land, how awesome that exchange was as well. And the very essence of, you know, I'm not just looking at the hidden and the uneven, but the contact, you know. I think women, in essence, are the only permanent contact we know as men outside of ourselves, right? And mm-hmm. I mean it across the board in all contexts. It's the only permanent contact we know in this physical world. I think philosophies sometimes go ahead of good natural function, and I think in some cases we do need philosophy to aid natural function. But the beautiful thing is, when you understand who a mother is, the essence of what an ancient mother was said to be or esteemed to be, a mother becoming a grandmother, becoming a great-grandmother in the family structure is like literally the head of several nations, to be honest, right? Liking unto mm-hmm. a mother of nations. I don't think in other contexts maybe we want to mention it, and I don't think sometimes when we do it, people understand it. It's not in no context of a goddess worshipping. It's actually in the context of being a mother for a nation has a responsibility, like we would say a father for a nation, for essentially the children, the subjects therein, the multiplicity and configurations of human life. Even further in Proverbs as well, it goes on to describe her industrious nature, right? And I think we spoke a little mm-hmm. bit about that in one of the other programs. So essentially, mm-hmm. the true woman that is spoken of in King Solomon's in his praise to his mother, you know, is like symbolic of every true mother. it is a deeply moral, efficacious woman who understands the dimensions of her husband, her children, her grandchildren, her great-grandchildren, you know, her in-laws, you understand me, and the essence of how her children's wives and husbands are a part of the family. You understand? It's like being a mother of nations. And I think when a woman looks at her reality in an overall context of not just for the pleasure thereof, but for the service thereof, the service, being in the servant of the divine, she gets more out of life. Because I think it's the essence of nurturing. I know it might sound like a tad bit on a masculine view, but also I think it's been a part of why life has been unbalanced. If woman loses her nurturing abilities and become more logical and, you know, more physicalized in like a masculine sense, I think that sense of gentility will and what its effect is upon the lactating mother and the socializing mother and that child that grows in that consciousness. You understand? I think we are having a set of women that are manifesting. Pardon my growing into this point, but I hope they were staying with me. I think we have a set of mothers that have been grown in a modern context that are a little too removed of the nurturing or of what we might ascribe as the feminine. And I think that is showing up in the harshness of the kind of children, the way the males are and how withdrawn the women are and how the separation is. So I think that godly, honorable, you know, functionally decent woman of the ancient is more what we need as archetypes and as templates for now.
Yes.
You know, not without trying to be judgmental, but just seeing that is so above the standards now that it's actually aspirational. I mean, I would love always to speak about that, but it's so aspirational. I think getting back to this is where we are to be heading. And, you know, men and women being produced from such wonderful women will be the resurrection of our lives here on earth through Christ.
Amen. Amen. I say that, you know, in response, is that one of the things that we are looking for. You know, we have our Israelite tradition of Messiah, of Mashiach, as we call him, is the restoration of the crown of the true understanding of the true eternal divine teachings. And that means that once those teachings are reestablished without any distortions and illusions and egos getting in the way, is that you'll see people, we in the 21st century, will start to emulate not only by memory but by our actions the lifestyles of the ancient peoples, when those ancient peoples who lived healthy lifestyles. And one of the testimonies, as I like to say, from when we talk about the 13 attributes of mercy, which with our prophet Moses revealed after the horrible sin of the golden calf, is that the Creator says, I will do kindness for 2,000 generations for those who do kindness and love me. And so all of us, William, Jerome Sage, and I, we must have had some ancestor did something good that we were not even, we're maybe 200 generations from the time of that, or 150 generations from the time of that transmission of the 13 attributes of mercy that the Creator revealed to Moses. I think it's around chapter 33 or 34. You can look it up in the book of Exodus. So we will see, not just as a, you know, like you have like, I mean, one of the things that pains me a little bit, Jones, I'll be honest with you, is that I know that there's a statue of Bob Marley that makes him look about 6'5" or 7 foot in Jamaica. I don't know what's by his home in Kingston or whatever, but I think Bob would be greater honored by us living the life that he tried to teach through his music. And he, you know, I understand he was a master of charity and he promoted brotherhood. So I'm saying I don't want to put an ancient righteous human being on a pedestal and worship that pedestal, or, you know, so to speak, make them just into a concrete slab that can be chiseled out to look like some sort of art form, like say Michelangelo did of King David. I want to emulate his or her, because there are many righteous women in our past, those type of values that made us be drawn and attracted to a Bob Marley, to be drawn and attracted to a Marcus Garvey, to be drawn and attracted to, say, a Rebbe from 400 years ago.
Esther of the Bible, right?
Esther of the Bible,
yeah,
and Sarah, and all these ancients,
and Naomi,
the daughter of Paro.
And Naomi,
yeah. All these. We're not supposed to, you know. I mean, I'm looking forward to their resurrection because we part and parcel of our 13 attributes of faith is resurrection. But the woman that does these things, as we mentioned before, because she is an example of that ancient positive lifestyle, because she goes through so much in the childbearing years, and I have to say as well, when she goes into her menopausal years, and this is something that also should be discussed, hopefully, if not today, in the future. You know, in Japanese culture, they actually honor the woman that she's passed into the menopausal stage, that she stopped her fruit-bearing years. Now, you don't have that in the West. It's a rejection of the woman who is past her age of being fruitful and being able to multiply. But it's such a foolish, short-sighted viewpoint. Maybe you'd like to comment on that, Jerome Stage.
Well, I think the industrialization of viewpoints in the West causes industrialized mindset in child-rearing and, you know, production of a human life. I think, you know, they're on the conveyor belts in the factory floors of our communities and our community centers and our workspaces that, yeah, it's a production line, you know, human life system around here in the West, and that devalues anything that is past. It's what we call its virility, right? Because its virility is being all about having the innocence and the kind of self to just be a, you know, a functionary in the system, you know, to be like a mindless pawn in the system. In Eastern traditions, we still hold on to some forms of anciency by just the fact is their cultures have evolved slightly different in ideology from the West. They were able to reserve and preserve some form of decency, of honor, that is beyond this production mindset. That is actually, you know, some would talk about the feng shui in their society, how heaven and earth harmonizes. And in essence, I think they are preserving some of that and understanding that the grandmother, like I was saying before, is honorable, because after the childbearing years, there is the government. You know, the feminine government, as I said, like, you know, a mother of our nation, the feminine government ensues where now she's responsible not just for her children, but for her grandchildren or great-grandchildren, wives and husbands. You know, it's not just something we're taking for granted, because the older woman is and the more established she is in the presence of her holiness, she becomes all these things. And it is something that is not just to be spoken of, but to be honored in record as well too, because I think patriarchy has kind of diminished, right, the examples of the feminine, and I know that there's a lot of women who can always give 100 examples to everything a man gives, right? That means that I think a lot of the feminine records of their own achievements have not really been in the masculine publications, and I think that is something that needs to be addressed, and so we can understand more the viewpoints of strong women, especially in the context of family and relationship, because I think the men have dominated that area for a very long time. And because a lot of our culture is, again, masculine in the West especially, the essence of, I guess, valuing the man's opinion a lot more over the woman's opinion is something that has off-balanced us too. So I think it's not that the women aren't saying anything, it's that they are saying things, but in terms of the man having the steering wheel and the gear shift, it's like, you know, he's taking it under advisement, but rather it should be equally considered. Like I was saying in some of my videos previously on Sailor Media, I would say that what has happened is that we've been so squarely, firmly placed in looking at the masculine viewpoint of everything in relationship, in family, in community, in business, that we don't think that there's an equalizing premise in looking at the woman's viewpoint as a part of your viewpoint and vice versa. Not just to have a feminine viewpoint if you're a woman, and also have a masculine viewpoint if you're a man, but to unify the masculine and the feminine, that we have a whole view of each other. And I think this is what, when one lives with their great-grandmothers and their grandmothers are influencing them, this is what they learn, more than a singular view, one that is respectful of the masculine as well. Because anything that is going to benefit a woman towards the future has to be considered of how she shapes the image of the masculine in her views as well, too.
Beautiful. William, any take on these matters?
Well, I agree completely with what both of you guys said, especially Jerome. I don't have anything additional to add, just because he covered pretty much the entire base.
Okay. So we'll go on to the next verse, which is addresses the zealousness of the woman, the alacrity, where King Solomon writes in chapter 31, verse 15, she arises while it is still night. She gives food to her household and allotted share to her maidens. Now, we just talked about the woman being likened to a merchant ship, meaning she goes afar. She goes out of her comfort zone, but she doesn't forget. Just like she does not emulate the ivory tower philosophical or, you know, learned human being. She goes out and she comes in and still rises. When we say she rises when it's still night, we mean the implication is she's arising before the dawn of morning, and she gives food to her household, meaning she not only is it physical, she is nurturing her children, her little boys, her little girls, even her husband, that she is able to live life with such enthusiasm that she is able to thrive and survive above the turbulent waters of all the differences that can take place in her life, and still think about what her family needs. And the food that she's giving to her household is, she is exemplifying the attribute of alacrity, of being zealous. And that's a very important point, because in our Jewish values, alacrity, being on the move, not running like a chicken with its head cut off, but to have purpose, it removes your doubts for purpose and intent of why you're created. And that she still has time to allot a share to her maidens, meaning she is exemplifying to those who are not necessarily of her household how they should conduct themselves. She's not just someone who delegates and segregates. She's someone that energizes and is going to show her maidens. She might be, if she is someone who, I mean, I don't know how many women have people that work for her that are considered quote-unquote maidens, but she is exemplifying this attribute, because one day those maidens will mature to the point they become the women of their household, and they saw a wonderful example of alacrity and caring for others, and they will be inspired to share those values with the next generation, their sons, their daughters, and their husband.
Absolutely. It's like the women of a certain level of, you know, awareness and that quality you talk about, you know, they become inspiration. They literally become inspiration. And to the debutantes, they become like the examples, right? Of a qualitative state of being in the feminine consciousness. You know, a behavior in a way that is decent. And the debutantes in each culture have a different rites and rituals that they have to go through to then become, you know, to become matriculated into the flow of being, you know, actual wives and mothers. But the essence of it is all the same. It is founded in the honor and the civility and the sacredness of how, you know, the older mothers have basically lived, what they have honored, what are the traditions they hold. So when a woman is industrious, but is also principled, is also decent, you know, and at the same time, you know, reverent in her nature, she sparks and inspires, you know, a generation of like-minded individuals after her. It's just a thing that once you have a woman that is clarity-bound, clarity-oriented, you find that what she offers is palatable. Not just that it's pleasurable, that is what is associated a lot with women, but that it's palatable. You understand me? It is applicable to many of our lifestyles, right? Because In what instance isn't there a woman in the circumstance? And that's what I want to know. Because there's always a woman. How far away is she? 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 2 degrees removed, she's there. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Which man comes in this world less of a woman? Less he comes of a woman. So the essence of it is that this is the half of the existence. It does have an important part to do with the whole. When you have strong, powerful, beautiful, you understand me, successful women at what they do culturally, economically, religiously, it inspires a like generation of women and men. Because when they mother children, they mother not just their own children, especially in some of the Eastern tradition, they mother the community. And from mothering the community, you know, a more open and broader view of the persons of the human being is espoused. So I would think sometimes I would like to learn a little bit more from Eastern mothers who have grown to this, you know, maturity, because I think it's necessary that, I know lots of great African American women write books on the same kind of issues we're talking about. And from my vantage point, I've read some of these books. You know, I've read some books from Diana Van Zandt, and I think, you know, she's made attempts to paint a broader picture of what is feminine, of what is being a mother, or what is to be, you know, a woman in relation to what it means to be a man, in the unity of thought as well, because she writes across the board as well to appeal to men. And I think, you know, there are other authors, I've just not read too much of them, you know, I'm sure on all the mixed scales as well too. But for me and my, you know, black condition, it is just a situation. I think we are learning a lot in our black communities and black families, and I think we aren't there as yet, because as a previous ancient nation within the context of a Western society in some cases, or a disjointed society wherever you are in the world, I think the essence of what woman is still being challenged by old patriarchal views. As we talk about in our program for the first time we spoke, about sometimes old patriarchal views that don't give women any space to opine, you know, to even express, you know. So some of that still lingers in some of our old traditions, and sometimes it comes with a lot, you know, African communities. And, you know, it's about us now going into our own privacy and learning from the wider human community of how to be honored and honor our women, and to, you know, bring a harmony amongst the human family, because where one woman is held low, all women are held low, you know? And when one woman is held high, all women are held high. It's a movement of which we should go towards, you know?
Thank you, Jerome. William?
Yes, so actually what Jerome mentioned kind of segues into my thought as far as patriarch mindset. And reading that verse, it mentions that a woman is she's industrious, and it's really interesting to see how in that time in our time we'd say the man is the breadwinner, the man is the one that brings home the bacon, but from hearing that verse and reading that verse, it sounds like the woman brings home the bacon in a way. But it's like giving her, in this society, we need to give women more of the power, not the power, but the credit they deserve as far as what they do for the household, what they bring to the table, and pretty much just removing ourselves from the patriarch mindset and moving more into something more of a balance, pretty much.
Yeah, beautiful. One more verse, gentlemen, for today's presentation. I think this shows the intuitive wisdom that a woman possesses, to the extent that that King Solomon would write about such an attribute, that it says in chapter 31, verse 16, she contemplates a field and purchases it. From the fruit of her hand, she plants a vineyard. Now, let's go into the Western mindset. I know in America, there was a certain point in time when a woman could not vote, a woman could not even own property. It wasn't until like the late 60s or early 70s, a woman couldn't even have her own credit card. But here King Solomon's talking about a woman looking into a field, which I believe is referring to an opportunity. She meditates upon an opportunity, and she purchases it, meaning she internalizes the opportunity. And lo and behold, from within the same verse, from the fruit of her hand, she plants a vineyard, meaning a woman is able to look at situation that no one else sees as a point of opportunity, a seminal point of opportunity, acquires, internalizes it, and looks at her efforts, the fruit of her hands, and there of a sudden, out of a barren field, allegorically, there you have a vineyard of succulent fruits and vegetables and produce, and life is springing from a field of opportunity that no one perceived before that previous awareness on her part. Jerome Sage.
Well, you know, I would liken that on to the essence of impregnation and childbirth and, you know, growing your child up, right? I think, in essence, you know, it's like, yeah, I mean, a man plants seed, and that is the absolute fact there, but then the woman has to tend to it, you know? She has to nurture it, nourish it as well, too, from her own self. And I think this is why sometimes the societies have this stronger kind of compunction to let children stay with their mother when there is like a dispute, you know, with who gets to parent the child. Because even though the man really, the seed belongs to the man, I think who has tended and nurtured it has this great influence over it, especially over its constitution, right? How it eventually nourished and becomes formulated. So I think the very essence of her being so wise enough to see an opportunity where, like, let's say her husband did not see it, is the very essence of her being able to see and nurture a child that is yet first an idea, you know, a feeling, then it becomes a zygote, right? And then an embryo, right? And then from that, right, a life is being grown. So I think she's been experiencing the stages of from nothingness into somethingness, if I can say it that way, right?
Mm.
And I think because
I like
she's
it.
Been experiencing, and I think because she's been experiencing that, I think that is why I think women at times can look almost with a sixth sense, or let's just say psychic sense, of opportunity being fulfilled to the right part of thinking or the right actions. It's like someone she knows. I mean, people always talk about feminine intuition, as in having a sense of subtle knowing, you know? And I think this is something that, when it benefits men, we have used it, but I think it's time that we harmonize it into the practical thinking of the male, and so we can have a more heterogeneous viewpoint, just naturally as human beings. And I think we won't have to have, you know, these different movements to defend the integrity of women, because the thought of a balanced way of living would have been naturally actualized in both males and females. There's a work afoot, but I think it's just replete with the kind of understanding that the Most High has blessed us with the ability to do this. Now, we are in a time where the world, social media, the environment, it's close. Everything is at a point where it can be wrecked or it can be saved. And I think maybe that's why all these programs, you know, your program, you know, the stuff I do on Cheer Life and See the Media, and what Brother Williams does in his, you know, workspace and work environment, and also what he does also in his spiritual environment as well, too. It's the Spirit of the Most High God just showing all of us through our experiences how to have a balanced experience, responsible to bring about some more harmony amongst our human sexes, and indeed bring the planet together, bring the plane of life together.
Beautiful. William?
Yes, and I don't have much to say, but pretty much just one word. As that Jerome already mentioned, it's a woman's intuition. Even in science, it says that women have more intuition than men, and due to in pretty much reading that verse, that's what it makes me think about. Due to her intuition, she sees that there is value in the land, or there's value in the opportunity, and she goes for it. Whereas men are more do more rationale. So sometimes intuition does trump rationale in that you have like your gut feeling pretty much. So that's pretty much all I to add on to that.
That's, and by the way, when in my work in the field of mental health, that we are told sometimes you have to go with that gut feeling. And one of my primary mentors was a woman who said sometimes you have to go with that gut feeling. So I know I've, so to speak, in terms of my training as a mental health worker, I was allegorically impregnated by the idea of going with a gut feeling, not from a man, but from a woman. So I just, that's how I want to, you know, respond to your viewpoint. Drum Sage, believe it or not, we've come to the end of today's program. I'd like to thank you for using one of your most valuable of resources, your precious time here on this blessed earth. And I'm looking forward to contacting you with another week or two to figure out when we can reunite in June. Of course, William, you are most welcome to join us again. But before we sign off, Drum Sage, how can other blessed human beings, all anointed, never to be disappointed with a divine image, how can they connect to you for the various outlets that you provide for other blessed human beings to connect with you in cyberspace and ultimately real time?
Blessings, Brother Dana. We do give thanks again for just reasoning on the essence of our human experience, you know, masculine and feminine coming to harmony. It's been a joy, Brother William, once again sharing. Well, Jerome Sage Butler, you can, you know, reach me on Facebook, Jerome Sage Butler, and also on Instagram at Jerome Sage Butler, or you can find me on Tree Life Television Network, that is TREEALIFE, and the A and the L are capitalized, so TREE capital A capital LIFE, right? So it's capital A and L. Sheila Life Television Network, or Sheila Media, SEALA Media on YouTube. Or you can contact me 1-876-340-5326. And that is 1-876 340-5326. And as always, you know, I'm always interested in a good reasoning. I would say, some say convo, and positive, hopeful things, and just, you know, learning from the experiences. Blessings to you, Brother Don, for all you've done in mental health and in bringing these programs together where we can expand a little bit of the information we have garnered over time and share that with our listeners. Blessings to the people all across the earth, cyberspace, love, love, love. Ethiopia, hopeful, Jamaica, bless up.
You're welcome and thank you, Drum Sage William. Is there any way that if you are interested that people can contact you through a social media space that you feel comfortable with, or is it, you know, anything you'd like to share with us, how other people can contact you if you warrant that this is worthy of your time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. They can either reach me on Facebook or Instagram. My Facebook is Williams Ambrose, AMBROISE. And for Instagram, they can reach me at MAILLI_EOZ. And if they would like to call me or text me, it's 407-486-2747. And thank you again for the time as well, guys.
No problem. But so that concludes today's program, which was, I'd say, beyond the boundaries of eclectic, but that's okay because I'm very thankful that I could reunite with Drum Sage Butler from St. Andrew's Parish of Jamaica, the Diamond of the Caribbean, and of course with William and Ambrose. And this is your local international cyberspace tour activist, Donzo Sigun, reminding everyone that I've got to be good, Jerome's got to be good, William's got to be good, because at Tebe Tov Lahayti, which is nature of the good to do good, and the Creator is so patiently awaiting all of us to activate that good, not just to preach what goodness is, but to allow other people to absorb what we are trying to project, which is, again, an era where there's no jealousy, hatred, and competition, which causes war, strife, and division upon the face of the earth. We're going to segue out of today's program by a acapella version of a song that was made popular by Matisyahu several years ago. It's called One Day by the Maccabees. And the only musical instrument you're going to hear is the wonderful instrumentation of the human voice, which, as they say in Jamaica or within the Rasta wisdom tradition, word sound is power. Let's take advantage of this hour, blessed souls, and reduce the sighing and the crying and the lying, and let's upgrade the rejoicing in the human family experience. All 7.7 billion human beings gleaming and streaming into the creation. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, you have just listened to Anti-Eugenics Radio. Take care, everyone.
Blessings, blessings.